you smell what Barack has cooked?
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
And my name is Chris Kelly.
We are sitting in Washington, D.C., home of SmackDown Live on December 13th. I'm very excited about that.
I need to buy tickets for that.
Future home of the 2017 inauguration, but not future home of Melania and Baron Trump.
They can't put Trump in gold letters on a building. I don't want to live there. Is that out of the question? Has he talked? Maybe they can do that on the White House.
I know you weren't supposed to start with this. This is a podcast about the intersections of political politics and professional wrestling. We do it because we wrote a book
called The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling.
It's available at DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com and or just Google PresidentWrestler.com or WrestlerPresident.com, which we bought and forgot about. And
Do you Google URLs? You can just put them right in the bar there.
No, Google those and just see what shows up. Earlier this week, some Trump properties are actually taking down the gold letters.
Really?
Yeah, because the brand is invaluable anymore, so they're doing that. And if you've read our book, and hopefully you could afford it in Trump's America, but our book is available now for $9.99 a month. There's a wrestling reference there. He's a brand right now. Yeah. People like to think that he's a builder. No, he's not a builder. He's a brand.
He's been a brand for a very long time.
If the brand isn't connecting, you change the branding on it. Yeah. That's the whole gimmick.
See, that's the thing. The brand is about to be presidential, like a Rolex. Like, it's not bad. There was some stuff happening during the campaign. There were some sheriff stars, but it's not, the brand is fine.
I don't disagree with you, but the letters are coming down. Okay, that's all I'm saying. This was a very interesting week. We actually recorded in the middle of the week, early in the morning, and we're recording right now on a Sunday night. It is Sunday, November 20th, 2016. We're recording around 11 p.m. Survivor Series just wrapped up. But the main reason I wanted to record right now before the Thanksgiving holiday is because a lot has happened in the last 4 days, and most of it has been misdirection.
All of it has been misdirection.
Not all of it. There's actually been some stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, but that's the stuff we're not going to talk about as people. We will on this podcast,
yes,
but probably not as Americans. So let's get into it. So the stuff we talked about last week with Steve Bannon, still a problem. He's still a white nationalist.
Yes.
But he gives good copy.
He does. He had an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, and Steve Bannon, whether you want to admit it or not, is a fantastic storyteller. He understands storytelling devices. He understands storytelling tropes. Steve Bannon heads up Breitbart. Steve Bannon also used to work for Goldman Sachs and was a Hollywood executive and makes a lot of money every year on Seinfeld's syndication rights. He's not what you think of as your average racist. He knows how to spin a tale. Yeah. So he did an interview with The Hollywood Reporter and said,
"Darkness is good. Dick Cheney, Darth Vader, Satan, that's power. It only helps us when they get it wrong, when they're blind to who we are and what we're doing." So, supervillain.
If you combine Darth Vader and Dick Cheney and darkness, who do you get?
You get the guy who digs holes and takes souls, The Undertaker.
Steve Bannon is copying Vince McMahon's playbook here.
The Ministry of Darkness.
He's just
from the late 90s.
It's the beauty of all of this is we're noticing this, and I still am yet to be that upset about anything. Because we've been writing about this and we've been talking about this since August when Bannon came onto the campaign.
Right.
Most people know Bannon before that, or since then, as the man behind the Skittles meme.
Right. Well, did they know that?
Well,
they connect the dots.
Exactly.
The Skittles together.
Most people kind of didn't think he was going to win, him being Trump, so they didn't pay attention to Steve Bannon.
Right.
We never stopped paying attention, and Steve Bannon never stopped telling amazing tales. They're lies. They're blatantly lies.
Yeah. They're
still a good storyteller. You have to admit when something is good.
So
he's
like,
a good storyteller.
Like if you were to say that Donald Trump is a genius because he told these stories and became a president, should you get boycotted if you're Kanye West?
No. I know this is a podcast about wrestling and politics, but no man combines those two loves more than Kanye West.
Yeah.
And yeah, I completely agree with you. Kanye West is right. Donald Trump is a genius. He won.
There's evil geniuses, guys.
That's what all the movies are. Those are the movies.
Yeah.
And the songs and the theater. It's the same thing. It's The Undertaker, the most beloved creation in Vince McMahon's arsenal, is that.
Yeah. Darkness is good.
So that's the one story that I think we should still be talking about all the time, because people are very upset that Steve Bannon will be part of the administration, as they should be.
Right. And unfortunately, it's in a position, it's in a kind of special advisory role that is not subject to Senate consent or approval. So there's nothing you can do about it. This is the part where if people were to be, we're in a political podcast, obviously, but if you were to get involved, you could, you know, try to get your congressmen and senators on the record about this white nationalist in the White House and see if they feel any political pressure.
And it's been working if you are on that side, because phone lines are jammed,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful right now, the way people are actually picking up a phone and using it and showing up and protesting. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
That's the first story that I think people are no longer paying attention to.
And there's another one in there too that's related, which we didn't even have in our outline because it's been a busy couple of days. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III is the nominee for Attorney General. He was once too racist to be a judge in the 80s, but in 30 years later, he's going to be in charge of civil rights. And that one is up for the Senate's approval, but he was a senator, and Harry Reid in 2013 used the nuclear option, so they just need a simple majority. And even in the where there should be ways for people to, you know, once again call their senators and clog up the phone lines, doesn't look like much can be done there.
So we've already had two huge stories.
Yeah,
this is not normal in any way. There's a third story that's also incredibly not normal in any way.
You usually don't have the president-elect settle a $25 million fraud lawsuit months before becoming the president. I'm pretty sure. I haven't done a lot of research, but I'm pretty sure.
But we do now.
Yeah.
We do now. President-elect Trump has settled out of court, or in court, but yeah. So on the record, he's still innocent.
Yeah. Because he's a genius.
He's a fucking genius. But he paid out $25 million.
Yes. And it's probably not an admission of guilt. I've stopped following specifics of this stuff.
So this happened late last week.
Right. But that wasn't the big story that everyone was talking about.
No. Sometimes men go to the theater.
And you have to say it like that. You actually pronounce it R-E at the end, too. That's good.
Hell yeah.
I didn't think you could pull it off. Yeah, so Vice President-elect Mike Pence went to Hamilton because he heard it was a cool thing to do. Rap, hip hop is cool, especially in a mix of history. He got booed because he's not a good person.
To the Hamilton theater goers. Yeah. And I know most of our listeners believe in conversion therapy, so we're clearly on Vice President Pence's side. Here's the fun thing about this. If anyone ever takes a transcript of anything I say, I'm a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Without context, horrible.
But you're going to be fine. You're going to be in the good camp.
Okay.
So he got booed, and then after he left, the Hamilton cast thoughtfully came up with a nice statement to say to the vice president-elect. They said it, and it was very nice and thoughtful, and he wasn't there, so he didn't hear it. The president-elect said that they should apologize.
Yeah.
Did he do one of the SNL, which I hear is not very good? Did he do that too on the Hamilton tweets? Because that'd be fun, too, if he's like the cast of Hamilton, which I hear is pretty bad in the second act and falls apart.
He said it's highly overrated.
Well,
he did.
Listen, a bro clocks right twice a day. We all talked about Pence and Hamilton and if you can boo someone. And people at the New York Times, the paper of record, were pretty upset that the vice president-elect, who favors conversion therapy, which leads to suicide, they were really upset that he got booed because that's like decorum. Or something.
So here is the front page of the Sunday, November 20th, 2016, New York Times. Top left corner, the new boss, he's a lot like the old Trump in fighting and rewarding loyalty. And that's an important story that belongs on the front page. I don't think there's any, what's our president going to be like? That's an important, worthwhile story. Here's the other one. Trump is meeting with wide array of possible picks. And this is important story. He's meeting his golf course, his private course. We'll get to that in a second. That's an important story.
Yeah.
Still above the fold, 1A, Hamilton plea sets stage for a Trump clash. That's on the cover of the New York Times. The other piece on the cover of the New York Times above the fold, in-law with outsized power, Kushner is a steadying hand.
Yeah, I didn't see the Bannon thing or the Jefferson Beauregard session thing or the $25 million lawsuit thing.
So you got a guy saying, hey, you know that guy we thought we knew? We know him. And then also, hey, here's some speculation. And then, hey, the theater's mad. And then the other one is like, hey, Triple H here. He's a studying hand.
We're going to get into why Jared Kushner is Triple H, which we did last week. But I think you also need to point out that the Hamilton subhead, which is pretty amazing in like the genteel New York Times, Cast's appeal to Pence reverberates with Twitter blast. You also have to pronounce it that way.
So this is why I wanted to record this show on a Sunday night. Because Donald Trump is a genius, like Vince McMahon, We will not be talking about Steve Bannon on the front page of the New York Times this week. We will not be talking about Jeff Sessions on the front page of the New York Times or the Trump University settlement. We're going to be talking about Hamilton, which has more people tonight have watched Survivor Series than has ever seen Hamilton.
Yeah, especially this boycott.
Because also, really quick, this is sort of related to wrestling. What really bothers me in the boycott Hamilton boycotting on Twitter, making fun of that meme.
Yeah.
People are like, how they can't even afford to see Hamilton. That's not true. And I think that we need to talk about this almost every episode because the majority of people that voted for Trump make more than $50K a year. Everyone that the majority of people that voted for Clinton make less than $50K a year. Yeah. This is the upper middle class and the upper class that voted for Trump in terms of numbers. Therefore, no, they could afford Hamilton tickets.
Right.
If you really want a different way to think about this, more people that owns Shins albums voted for Trump than own ICP albums. So let's stop making fun of poor, dumb white people that voted for Trump because they didn't vote for Trump. That's a lie. That's not how the numbers worked out. And it's the same with the WWE. We need to stop pretending that it's just a bunch of poor whites that watch the WWE.
Yeah, I'm looking up those stats now, but you can keep talking.
The WWE has a very diverse viewership. That's actually one of the reasons why you haven't seen any pro-Trump or anti-Trump or pro-Clinton or anti-Clinton programming for this entire election cycle. The amount of Hispanics and African Americans that watch the WWE is about the same that watch the NFL, which means they're a diverse group of people here. It's not a one type of person.
The U.S. population, 11.8% black or African American. The stats I have are just for fighting, but it's 26% of African Americans watch boxing, about 16% watch UFC, 26% watch WWE. So it's comparable to boxing, comparable to other sports.
So you don't want to isolate an audience here.
No.
Therefore, no, there's way more people that will see Hamilton that voted for Trump than watch the WWE that voted for Trump. We need to remember this at all times.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on from that. Not completely, but somewhat. That was the cover of the New York Times. We've already gone through the How Hollywood Reporter. We should talk a little bit about Jared Kushner.
Trump's
right-hand man / Triple H. Jared Kushner is the son-in-law of Donald Trump. He happens to be Jewish. And there's a part in our book about that. It's a book plug right there. And not a swerve. Late last week, there was a report about him, how he got into Harvard.
Right.
Did you read this?
I did not. Why don't you tell me about it?
Jared Kushner was granted entrance into Harvard. Possibly, you can't prove it, possibly because his parents donated $2.5 million to Harvard. The interesting thing about this Guardian ProPublica story that they point out, his parents didn't go to Harvard. This wasn't an alumni gift. This was, you know how I do. You know, I like to gift millions of dollars to universities without any reason.
As you do.
You know how things work out. So that's how he got into Harvard. Maybe. And the wrestling analogy is perfect. His name is Triple H, Paul Levesque. Jared's having a big weekend right now. He was able to get Chris Christie out, and he was also able to marry the boss's daughter and maybe run his own little business on the side. And this weekend, the day before Survivor Series, was NXT TakeOver Toronto.
Yeah.
So Paul Levesque, Triple H, the son-in-law of Vince McMahon, got to run his own little show, and it was a pretty good show.
Yeah. I think the other comparison here, as far as when millions of dollars are floating around and you can't prove a quid pro quo, would be when Vince and Linda gave Trump Foundation $4 million after Trump had been at WrestleMania 23 for the Battle of the Billionaires, because you can't tax a donation to a foundation.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But I mean, it happened right after. But who's to say?
Yeah.
You know, I have actually seen a week closing the loop. Linda, I have not seen much about speculation of her in the administration. But you know, we could get swerved, and she could be an ambassador or something.
The ambassadorships have not been talked about at any of these meetings that we've seen reports on. Right. That being said, none of us have been in the room, including the press.
I mean, his daughter has been in the room.
His daughter has been in the room.
Yeah.
Listen, Stephanie's got an important role. God. We cannot show you this, but one of my favorite things in the WWE magazine, which no longer exists, special thanks to the Library of Congress for hooking us up with that,
yeah.
Is there was WrestleMania dream matches. And one of them was Ivanka versus Stephanie. And they also rated the likelihood of it happening. And it was like 0.0001%. And then there was a joke about how wouldn't it be great to see the daughters of billionaires like sexily tear it up. It was so weird. Anyways.
Did Vince and or Donald write that?
Oh, God. I know. It's so wonderfully inappropriate. Speaking of wonderfully inappropriate, right now, Donald Trump is at his country club in New Jersey vetting potential cabinet and other positions. And this reminded me of something that everyone thought was going to bring Donald Trump down, which is the locker room talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a lie. The locker room talk was the whole, I'm sexually assaulting women. Yeah. I'm Donald Trump. That when he said those things, I'm not going to say those
it's
things.
It's a quote, yeah.
Yeah.
Direct quote.
When he goes, I like to sexually abuse and sexually assault women for power reasons, you know, because I'm Donald Trump. That was considered locker room talk, but that's not locker room talk. That's golf course talk. That's specifically private country club golf course talk. I was a caddy. Did I ever tell you this?
Yeah.
I was a caddy for a long time, like 13 to 16. And it was at it was a country club called Butler in the western suburbs of Chicago in Oak Brook, Illinois. It's the headquarters of McDonald's. And I thought that mistresses were part of a marriage until I went to college. No one told me, like, oh, no. You shouldn't have a mistress. I thought that was part of
the deal.
That's not part of the deal.
Yeah.
Mistresses were talking about and complained about on par with wives.
Right.
That's what Donald Trump was doing.
Was that club all white?
Yes, it was. It happened to be all white except one person. You could probably guess if you think about it. When I was caddying there, it was like 95 to 98. You want to guess?
Did he also have a small Hitler mustache at that point?
Yeah, not at that point.
Okay.
You want to close the loop on that one?
Yeah, that's MJ. That's Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yeah, Michael Jordan was the only African-American member there. There was no women allowed.
Right.
They used to have the PGA Tour, but the PGA Tour has a women's component to it, and they're like, no, we're good.
We're good.
And they let it go
because
of that. It's an invite-only private club.
What about Jews? We can close the loop on this wrestling-wise.
That's a good question. To my knowledge, no, but I don't think it was spoken.
It was a wink and a nod and a sheriff star.
And it was an invite-only club.
Okay, so they can...
Exactly.
There's ways around that Yeah. So it's a country club talk. No, this is... And that's the cultural divide, too, of making like, oh, this is just jock idiots, men in a locker room... Any guy at a gym? No, it's not.
No.
I've been in locker rooms. I don't remember talking about rape. I don't know.
Yes. Yep. There's no way to make that fun in any way.
No, it's not. It's not fun. I just want to say generally, we have a little more on this and get into some wrestling stuff to lighten the mood. But generally, I think all this stuff, as we're saying with the misdirection this week, the other things that didn't make it into our outline or much in the coverage would be the fact that... Ivanka was in meetings with the Japanese premier. The fact that they're basically made a sales pitch to foreign diplomats to stay in Trump hotels in other countries. They're going, wouldn't that be disrespectful if you don't stay at the Banana Republic president's hotel? He's basically like probably breaking. If he continues this stuff, he will be violating the Constitution. But these are things that there's no case history. Because usually you just worry about political embarrassment, and he doesn't care about that because he's not playing by political conventional wisdom of 200 years of history. He's playing by pro wrestling and playing by this other rule book. And this misdirection stuff, this is the thing, and I think that if people, fans of this podcast who happen to be against the Trump administration, really need to figure out the difference between Hamilton and kleptocracy pretty quickly, because there's going to be a lot of Hamiltons, because they're going to keep doing it because he just did it for 18 months. He kept saying, he kept whatever everyone was talking about, he was doing something much worse, and he did it for 18 months, and he's not, and what's the Times headline? New boss, same as the old boss. It's the same Trump campaign, and that's...
It's like what we've been saying the whole time. Carney's going to Carn.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Yeah. Why would you change the storyline if it's still selling tickets?
Yeah.
You don't do that.
$25 million, he settled a fraud lawsuit as about to be president. $25 million. And he sends the VP to the hip-hop history thing on Broadway. Like, that's the genius part.
Yeah.
Because you guys fell for it. You got worked is what it is. It's not even a swerve. You just got worked. Because that's what the Carnies are doing one thing. They're cashing your checks while you watch the entertainment and yell at the heel and cheer the face. And meanwhile, they're onto the next town with the money. So that's what we're going to be doing for 4 years. And I just think looking at all these like individual things is missing the bigger picture.
That's, I think the reason why we didn't put that in the outline is because if you take that to the next logical conclusion, does Trump ever become president? Or is Trump like impeached in week one? And I think that's such a boring dialogue to have. Because right.
No, it's not. No, I mean, we'll see. I don't think so. I think that would take political courage on either political party. And we don't, we haven't seen any evidence.
We have
that.
Not seen that. No.
Yeah, we have seen a Democratic Party that says they want to compromise on infrastructure because they don't know how politics works. But, you know, that's like,
listen,
that's
just
a little political science
just
stuff.
Because Chuck Schumer was praised by Donald Trump on Twitter this week doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, no, he's not using flattery to get what he wants. Like he does with, he just projects.
Speaking of not getting what they want, there have been a lot of protests since the election. And I was lucky enough to do the Patty Vasquez show on WGN Radio the night after the election. And that was, there was a protest in Chicago that night. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been one every night since. By the way, Chris has written a lot of op-eds. I've written some op-eds. And we've done a lot of radio and TV and magazine and newspaper hits. All of that is on DonaldTrumpAsAWrestler.com. Go to the press section. It's all there. If you're going to do one thing, I would recommend reading Chris's op-ed in the Washington Post. That's a paper of note that did not put Hamilton on the front page today. I want to make that perfectly clear. The Post did not do that. Anyways, protesters are still a big topic of conversation, specifically on Fox, Fox News and Fox Business. Kennedy, you might remember her because she has glasses. And here's a closing loop. She has glasses and was a VJ in the 90s and said that Michael Jordan tried to sleep with her.
Okay, well, there you go.
So there you go. She's got a show on Fox Business. She's a libertarian. And one of her frequent guests is Dolph Ziggler, who's been on this show before. And he's also in the book. I think he's in the book. Did we cut him?
No, I think he's in the book.
He might be in the book. Yeah, okay. So he's in the book. And he brought on his friend, fellow wrestler, who happens to be a demon, and The Undertaker's brother, Kane.
Yeah, and you know, I get using Dolph Ziggler's name. That's like his trade name. That's his nom de plume, whatever.
Yes.
But like, Kane, his name is Kane. Like, you can't, it's not like a real name.
Fair,
like, you
to be
could,
fair,
he
to
could
be fair.
Change his name to Dolph Ziggler. He can't change his name. Well, he could warrior it.
To be fair,
Glenn Kane.
Kane goes by two names. He could be a corporate Kane or Demon Kane.
He used to be a dentist. That's a wrestling joke.
Oh, God. Look, so, Kane
was there.
Kane is there, and he's teased about running for office for quite some time.
Yes.
So, it's not surprising. He is sort of well-known in libertarian circles, and he said some things about protesters.
You know, you were talking about the people that didn't vote.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you're always going to have those folks that anytime there's trouble, they're going to be attracted to it. I'm more interested in the people that are actually genuine in their protesting. And for me, it's like, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
You go out and show the world that you're extremely angry. Hey, guess what, sunshine? No one cares.
Yeah.
Okay, if you want to do something constructive, get out of your echo chamber.
Yeah.
Get off Facebook and social media where everybody is talking about the same thing you agree with. Stop denigrating and screaming at people you don't agree with. And go talk with your neighbor who maybe voted for Donald Trump. And what you're going to find is they're not a homophobe, racist bigot. What they are is generally a common, hardworking, decent person who's fed up with a permanent Washington political overclass.
Yeah.
They're tired of people in Washington not looking out for their interests, but looking out for the interests of the very rich and the very powerful.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like Bernie Sanders.
It does.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
We travel all over the world, and what I found is that people in general want the same thing. They want a decent living for their families. But instead of starting from that point, we start with what we disagree on and how to reach that.
Yeah.
So I think what's more constructive, much more constructive, would be if we did talk about what brings us together and what we all want.
Yeah, and in this, when I think on Fox Business, was it on Fox Business?
Fox Business.
In the year of our Lord 2016, if Kennedy, Dolph Ziggler, and Kane were on, and they were all going to be libertarians, which would be the one I could handle the most? I didn't think it'd be Kane.
It's Kane, baby.
It's Kane. There's Kane.
At first, I was like, oh, Kane, you don't get it. But then at the end, he's like kind of bipartisan.
He gets populism. He understands
that. He gets it. I cannot agree with him on this. I think that protesting, regardless of the side you're on, is incredibly important. Clearly, I think we're both advocates for peaceful protest.
I go either way. I mean, whatever gets results. I don't think any protest gets results, but that's fine.
It's a matter of tactics. I don't think we need to get into that. There's no wrestling analog for that.
No.
Listen, I don't know if you remember this, but there were some Daniel Bryan's fans that occupied Raw.
And really
changed some things. I can't agree with him, but I do think that it's interesting that two professional wrestlers, one recent former Intercontinental Champion and a man from hell, are on Fox Business, and that's normal. That's just
a normal thing.
Normal programming note. Let's close with some actual wrestling here.
Yes. So on Saturday, as you mentioned earlier, the Jared Kushner of wrestling, Triple H, he ran his it's called NXT. We've talked about it before if you listen to the show, but it's the minor leagues for the WWE, owned by WWE on their network, on their TV. And so they had a special. And what were the things that that you saw that you really wanted to talk about?
The only things I care about are Asuka, who is the current women's champion, and Samoa Joe Nakamura.
Correct.
That's all I care about.
Okay, so just from those, I mean, so Asuka is a Japanese woman who has been
dominating.
Dominated. She's undefeated. She's been there for a year. She's the champion. She beat the babyface hero back at WrestleMania weekend. Mm-hmm. And so they brought in Mickie James, who was she had been with the WWE, let me see what years.
Until 2010, like mid-aughts to 2010.
2003, she was in developmental 2003. She started 2005 through 2010, yeah.
So what I want to know, you know a little bit more about wrestling than me. Is she the first diva? And by the way, I'm not using that as a pejorative. Women's wrestlers were known as divas
until April 2016.
Okay, so is she the first women's wrestler / diva to come back into the fold and go to NXT?
Yes.
I think that's an interesting thing, because what this shows is Mickie James is and was a very good wrestler at a time when women's wrestling was not valued.
Right. I mean, one of her major moments in the WWE was at WrestleMania. She was in a storyline where she was the biggest fan / stalker of Trish Stratus, one of the best women's wrestlers ever. And it was kind of the stalker storyline was kind of tinged with a kind of a homoerotic lesbian storyline aspect to it. She grabbed her she actually did grab Trish Stratus by the pussy. And licked her hand and made the V sign and all that, which is no longer on broadcast. You have to go on like Daily Motion to find that one. But yeah, so I mean, that gives you a sense of what they were doing with their women's wrestlers.
None of that's there now, at least according to last night, which I watched.
As far as in the product, no. And they've even deleted that from if you watch that WrestleMania.
So what I find interesting about this is two things. Number one, you're taking someone that was undervalued and underappreciated, pushing them back into the, not main event, but one of the things that wrestling fans really care about 6 years later, and it seemed to go pretty well.
Yeah.
And she was, people liked her.
Yeah.
I liked
her. On. Yeah.
And now she's fighting this woman who is not a sex object in any way. She could be sexy or whatever, but
right.
Asuka is not like, oh, it's a sexy lady doing a thing. It's,
I mean, she wears like a G-string over her shorts and stuff, but it's weird. It's like she's like this Japanese murder pimp. It's
exactly.
Very strange.
It's more like the chant is never show us your tits. It's Asuka's gonna kill you.
Yeah.
That's the chant.
That would be the
gets.
Difference. Yeah.
That's, I think that's fascinating, because NXT is thriving right now, embracing multiculturalism and a diverse body type
and immigrants
and pro-sexuality, but not sexualizing any one gender. It's the exact opposite of what Mickey James came from. It's the exact opposite that this country is headed in. And I think that that's a fascinating little note in wrestling right
now. And I would say in the thriving, it's it has taken a step back from maybe a year ago. And also they had some difficulty. They generally, for most of their existence, they were just touring little bingo halls in Florida. It was developmental. It was for these people to get better before they were on the main roster and on TV every week. And now they're touring and they're playing the small room at MSG, and ticket sales are actually not doing well. So it's kind of interesting how much of it is the stars that people are going to see aren't there. They are kind of in a transitional point, but it's kind of this thing. And we had a great progress with a progressive multicultural thing, and now we're at a kind of tipping point and see which way it goes. It's one to watch. But on that main event, same thing, a similar thing, having Shinsuke Nakamura, who was the champion against Samoa Joe, who defeated Shinsuke, became a two-time champion. But Shinsuke, they've had a... Okay. So there's a piece in Vice Sports about how Japanese wrestlers are having a renaissance in WWE. And, I mean, generally, you know, you'd had... Rest in peace, but you had Mr. Fuji for a long time. We had these stereotypical things, stereotypical roles for any foreign wrestler, but the Japanese fared just as poorly as everyone else. But now you've got this guy whose thing is he's not... They don't play on any Japanese stereotypes with him. He kicks ass. And it's not, and he's not the stereotypical type of wrestler. He's not a flippy cruiserweight type guy. He's a guy who will knee you in the face and bust your eye open.
There's a name for him. It's Strong Style.
Strong Style.
And which really just means like a lot of knees. A lot of really hard knees.
It's supposed to be that the
knees.
Strikes, like the punches, the knees and the forearms are actually hitting on, they're not pulled punches.
Yeah. But it's interesting. Here's another thing. Both Joe and Nakamura are closer to 40 than 30.
Yeah.
Joe is 37. Nakamura is 36.
Yeah.
So the future, like the Democrats, the future of your party is with these guys that can only be in the main event for so long because they're aging out.
Yeah.
Hey, Democrats, what's your bench? You got Bernie Sanders, who's 70-something, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's your bench. So
that's the bench.
Both Bernie Sanders and NXT have a lot of soul searching to do.
Yeah, they've got.
Who are we? What are we doing?
It is the identity crisis and the changing of the guard. I will recommend that you and people watching this who have access to the WWE Network check out the tag match. It was a 2 out of 3 falls between DIY, which is Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, and a team called The Revival, and it was a very good match.
All right.
And it culminated a year-long storyline, very satisfying. It's exactly what wrestling does well. What wrestling doesn't always do well in the WWE are big pay-per-views. Like we just finished about an hour ago, a Survivor Series. They started the night strong. I think the storytelling was what it made sense either way. We had basically the Survivor Series, as the name would suggest. It's an elimination match. They have to survive it. So they had 5-on-5 women, tag teams, and men. The women's match. So did you see any of this stuff earlier, or are you just following along?
I was following along.
Okay, so the Raw women won for the storylines along. It was good. There's some mystery. Someone was injured before the match. We don't know who did it, so tune in on Tuesday. Good storytelling. They had the Miz, the Intercontinental Champion, versus Sami Zayn. They were in Canada on the 19th anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. You listened to Radiolab, did a good thing on it, and... if you don't know what the Montreal Screwjob is, so they did a rehash of that. That was fine. The tag match was kind of a mess. I don't really remember it, but yeah.
Here's what I remember. Yeah. The New Day got eliminated right away.
And so did
my second favorite tag team got eliminated right away.
Breezango. Yeah, no, other than that, it was fine. It was only 19 minutes. And then
that whole match was only 19 minutes long?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So then the storytelling, and this is where we'll get to where you hope in wrestling... misdirection works, because a lot of this stuff that we're talking about, most people will not be talking about, and we'll get to why. So the next thing happened was there's a thing called the Cruiserweight Championship. It's a division for wrestlers under 205 pounds. It's supposed to be lighter, faster, flippier type guys. And they were vying for which show, Monday Night Raw or SmackDown Live, would have this whole division. We know, because they're a publicly traded company, they will soon start a show called 205 Live. On Tuesday nights after SmackDown on their network. And so logistically, it made sense that of course SmackDown will have to get these guys. They're not going to have people in an arena at a different on a different tour. That'd be silly. You can't do that. So of course that's what's happening, because the big guy that beats up the little guys came in and did that and changed the end of the match. But Baron Corbin does good work.
For
so
all
okay.
we know, they might change that on Tuesday and be like, guess what?
We
traded Baron Corbin and blah, blah, blah.
We traded Baron Corbin for the little guy division.
Yeah.
So that narratively didn't really, it made sense for his storyline, but not for the logistics. But I don't care about the logistics of a $1 billion company, so who cares?
As a stockholder, I really care about the logistics of a $1 billion company.
We really should have bought on November 7th.
I bought on the night of the first debate. And I was.
Did you legit?
I legit bought some stock on the night of the first debate, and I was going to write
what
a piece.
What a mark!
And I was going to write a piece about was it more worthwhile to write a book about Trump or to own stock about Trump? But that only made sense if he lost.
Mm-hmm.
So now I just have WWE stock.
Get worked into a shoot, brother. Then we had our which, by all accounts, should have been a headlining match. It was a 5-on-5 match between the stars of SmackDown, the stars of Raw. It started kind of strong. It had some schmazes in the middle, and then an ending that I was actually surprised by.
I disagree. I think the whole thing was worth it.
Okay.
Here's why. My favorite thing in wrestling right now was Jericho's list.
Yes.
That played a big factor in the first 10 to 15 minutes of the match. The second part of the match that I absolutely adored was a man trying to vie for the love from his father. Shane McMahon wrestled for the second time in 2016, only the second time in, like, what, a decade?
Mm-hmm.
And he's 50.
And he jumped off from the ring through a table onto a larger man, and then he also jumped from one turnbuckle across the ring and then was speared, which is exactly what it sounds like.
From a former football player.
He was tackled. That's what it was.
So an old man got beat up, and his father still doesn't love him as much as the daughter. Because that's the Trumps.
Yeah.
And that's the McMahons.
There's a chapter of that in the book, The Donald.
That's why I loved it. And then I love the fact that you being the WWE, have made Randy Orton, someone I've never cared about, somewhat interesting.
Yeah, he has a new alliance, and he like took a bullet for his new buddy.
There you go. See?
Friendship.
And the Wyatt family won.
A thing. They
and
won a thing.
That made you happy and surprised. And I like seeing my friends happy. And then you also said, Raw's going to win all of them because
it's the show that it's the show that Stephanie is on, which the Ivanka of the WWE, and she's got to look strong.
But instead, they murdered her brother, and they let SmackDown win. So it's like everybody won.
Everybody won.
That made everyone feel happy.
I think Stephanie gets a lowercase W on that. But yeah, no, it was good. Here's the problem, though. That match was 53 minutes long. You described like three things that happened. Oh, also the Shield, the biggest team. One of the biggest tag teams of all time reunited, did their special thing. It was pretty cool. But the match was 53 minutes long.
I completely forgot. And then there was a man that they refer to as like a troll.
A mascot. He held the big man. It's when you describe wrestling, you sound like a small child telling a story.
It's fun.
Yeah.
But here's
one thing I want to point out, and this is just for wrestling fans or anyone still listening to this, is that SmackDown. So here's the difference between Survivor Series 2016 and 2014, this year's match. I mean, I'll omit a couple people, but AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, Jericho, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins. 2014 Survivor Series, Team Cena, John Cena, one of the best to ever do it. Dolph Ziggler, okay.
He's here to show the world.
The Big Show.
He's a big show.
Eric Rowan, he's also a big show. Ryback, not in the company anymore.
He's a big guy, though.
Team Authority, Seth Rollins, he was here again. Kane, Mark Henry, Rusev, and Luke Harper. Wrestling, this got better because that match was garbage.
Sure. Yeah.
This one, Sting didn't show up, but it was a lot of fun, apparently. I blacked out in the middle. It's 53 minutes long. But here's the thing. So all those, the storytelling, good or bad, in the earlier part of the night, in the first 3 hours of the 3.5-hour program, was all prelude for Fantasy Warfare just got real. That's the tagline that someone wrote. And it was Vince McMahon. It was like not a marketing department because that's like not a sentence. But it was Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. We talked about this last time. It was a rematch that you wanted to see in a video game, not in real life, because these guys are 10 years older than the last time they did this.
And no, 12.
12.
And that matters.
Yeah, because that's not regular years for these guys. But Brock Lesnar, heavy favorite. He's the one who's going to be in the company for at least a couple, you know, a couple more years, maybe, depending on what happens with his UFC drug test. Bill Goldberg, 49 years old, coming back one time to show his wife and kid what it looks like. They never saw him wrestle before. You assume here the Goldberg won the last one. Probably Brock's going to win because they got Brock Lesnar is the guy that's around to kick ass, you know, every month or when they need him. And Goldberg hit his two moves. He hit three of them and won in a minute and 25 seconds. And it was what the crowd wanted because everybody's been really happy to see Goldberg back because he was really big in the Attitude Era in the 90s.
But not really. Well, he was big in that era, but not for the WWE.
No, but wrestling fans are all one body now.
So
there's no like Team Raw fans and Team SmackDown fans. Sure.
Lesnar's 39.
Yes.
Goldberg's 49.
There's no bench.
There's no bench.
Yeah.
And just like this country, wrestling is still catered to older whites that remember the Attitude Era, that want to live out their fantasies. Because there's a lot of great stuff, specifically in the cruiserweight division. There's a guy that you dragged me to see in a JCC, and it was amazing. He was the best thing I've ever seen. It's Cedric Alexander. I enjoyed seeing Cedric Alexander wrestle more than I've ever enjoyed watching Goldberg or Lesnar wrestle. Right. But Cedric Alexander is like 30 and black.
Yeah.
Guess who's not headlining a pay-per-view if you're
who
the
Who is
WWE.
Not even on the pre-show of this one. Yeah.
Come on. Like, that's the... How much longer can we live in the past, both as a country and as a wrestling organization? I'm not joking.
I know. It's
the same
fun to say. It's fun
thing.
To say. Also, I would like to close the loop. We've been doing that a lot today. I had asked if there were any Jews at your country club. That's it might have seemed like a non sequitur, but Paul Heyman is the advocate for Brock Lesnar. He is a Jewish man. Also, Bill Goldberg is as well. In the at one point, Brock Lesnar was on a podcast with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he asked him about why he still works with Paul Heyman. And on a live broadcast on the WWE Network, this is what Brock said.
Your promos in the UFC, I loved them. Because that was Brock being Brock. And so your promos here, you don't speak as much. You start laughing about the promos.
I got to feed the Jew. he's got to eat.
So do you...
So yeah, so somebody got fed tonight, and it was Bill Goldberg.
All right, well, we clearly both enjoy WWE programming, and most people that are wrestling fans will watch the pay-per-view, will watch the specials. They'll watch Raw, they'll watch SmackDown. This is the year that we've learned that the best wrestling programming isn't the wrestling programming that you're supposed to watch. It's the after show, and tonight, in the rare occasion, the pre-show.
Yeah.
Because the pre-show, no one's watching, and it's a lot of fun. So did you find this clip? Were you watching live?
I watched the second part of this, but I missed the kind of the money of this interview, and I saw a GIF. But basically, when we say no one's watching, the subtext is Vince McMahon is not watching.
Yeah.
And so wrestlers, and that's the same thing on the Talking Smack thing we've been talking about, the post show, he's home for the night. He's 70 years old. He's not watching the thing that all the nerds are watching. And so wrestlers are doing, they're getting away with a lot. It's like the teacher's out of the classroom. And this is in the pre-show. Kevin Owens and his best friend, Chris Jericho, another great thing from the Attitude Era. They're going to answer some questions from the WWE Universe via Twitter and Facebook with an announcer that they torment every week, Tom Phillips.
So this starts with Universal Champion Kevin Owens.
Kevin, thanks
I
for
saw
being.
Your password when you off your iPad just now. 6969. You're disgusting.
Can I ask you a quick question? A lot of people have been asking about it on Twitter. You know, I'm wearing blue because I'm on SmackDown Live, and then your new shirt is predominantly blue.
Oh, is it?
You're on Raw.
Is it? Really? So is SmackDown Live going to tell me what colors I can wear now? These are Blue Jays colors, you idiot. And I like money, so I made a shirt with those colors because we're in Toronto and I want people to buy my shirt. Is that good enough? Is that a good enough answer? I'm the WWE Universal Champion. I can wear whatever colors I want. You know what? I couldn't help notice. I have a problem, by the way. I couldn't help but notice that you didn't invite my best friend here. Well, you know what? I'm inviting my best friend here. Chris! Chris! Chris!
Oh. Hey, let's get a chair.
Yeah, it's just, first of all,
Don't think I don't know why you didn't invite me, okay? I know you don't. You know, I don't like you, Phil. You don't like me. You don't like my best friend, Kevin Owens. And don't worry about what color he's wearing, all right? I'm wearing brown. You know what that rhymes with? Downtown. Because I'm going to take you downtown to Chinatown if you keep talking all this BS.
You know what I
all
love?
Right?
You know what I love is that you're actually wearing black, but you said brown anyway because you had the downtown and Chinatown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had to make it work. I'm just trying to fit in the
That's an artist.
Thing. That was actually, you know what? I had
You know why Chris, hang on. I have a cool thing.
Okay, sure.
You know why Chris is here, by the way? You know why?
He's your best friend.
No, well, yeah. Obviously. But also because, you know what this is? It's the Kevin Owens show. Come on, man, Suri!
There we go. Nice.
It wasn't... I hooked it up with a guy in the truck, but he didn't do it as fast as I wish. Yeah.
Next time.
It would have been way cooler.
And also, before, just to finish, I was wearing a brown jacket, and I forgot that it changed to the black jacket.
Well, still.
For real. But look at this.
Cool.
See what color Kevin show is? It's red. Red is for Raw.
Are you happy now? Like there's red!
Yeah, Phil, the red of the blood that courses through our winning veins tonight, man.